Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Adele Stan, who's a weekly columnist for the American Prospect, and she has a new article at the New Republic, First Family LLC. Welcome to Background Briefing, Adele Stan.
Great to be with you, Ian.
And when the head of MSNBC writes a statement, it's a sad day for America when the president spends his time bullying, lying, and spewing petty personal attacks instead of doing his job. And then going on to say, I never imagined a day when I would think to myself, it's beneath my dignity to respond to the president of the United States. This is a pretty extraordinary turn of events. Not surprising, but still, the idea that the president of the United States spends his time body shaming, attacking people in the most petty, personal way.
And vulgar. I mean, so vulgar.
Right.
And he has a thing about bloody women, doesn't he? You know?
Yes, right. That's true.
Women and blood. Right. I mean, the substance of the text of his tweet was that, you know, Mika Brzezinski, who is a co-anchor of Morning Joe, an MSNBC program, you know, and both Joe and Mika have been pretty tough on Trump. The president made this tweet saying that, you know, the two of them had come to Mar-a-Lago, the president's big club in Florida, on New Year's Eve, and wanted to hang with him, and he said no because Mika was still bleeding terribly from a facelift.
Right.
Now, this is also ironic coming from a guy who we know has had cosmetic surgery on his head to try to make it look like he has a full head of hair, right? but beyond that, Ian, you know, there's several things going on here. And when he does something like this, now, I'm not sure how totally premeditated it is. I think it's more like a primal pattern for him. But of course, it serves as a great, you know, shiny object for all of us to chase, because it is so incredibly outrageous. And it serves in his ongoing, regime of attacks on the press, which is all about, you know, that's right out of the authoritarian playbook. That's exactly what every authoritarian regime has done, you know, from time immemorial, is to attack the media, and it has been really systematic. I wrote about that this week for the American Prospect, about how systematic it has been, and the approach of not allowing cameras in the briefing room, and then assailing, when they do allow cameras, it's used as a platform to assail the press while they're sitting there. And this is all done to delegitimize the media and to, you know, divide the American people to the point where, you know, they don't know what to believe. So there is some method to this madness, but it all happened on the same day, you know, that the Presidential Advisory Commission on voting issued this, sent a letter to all of the states demanding that they turn over data on their voting rolls, including personal information of the people who are registered to vote, you know, party affiliation, everything. So, you know, so that in a regular presidency would be a huge story and probably a scandalous one, but this other thing happened, right? The facelift scandal.
So do you think that I mean, is there a method to his madness in the sense that he distracts the press and the public from the mendacity that's going on behind the scenes?
Absolutely, without a doubt. Without a doubt, Ian. I mean, if you just look at all of the stuff that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agencies, ICE, has been up to with the roundups. If you look at what Jeff Sessions has been up to, going to law enforcement agencies and addressing them and telling them that they don't have to comply with consent decrees and things like that. If you look at what is going on in the Department of the Interior with trying to roll back what we call national monuments, which are, you know, vast tracts of land set aside for conservation. They want to mine that stuff. They want to grab the timber out of it. That has been going on. I mean, it's one thing after the next. And in the meantime, you know, you have this big show, this big crap show going on, you know, from TweetDeck in the White House.
And again, I'm speaking with Adele Stan, who's a weekly columnist at the American Prospect, and she also has a new article at The New Republic, First Family LLC. But obviously there's an element of narcissism in this man that's pretty breathtaking, and I often think of it of this, that it's sort of paradoxical that he's both a narcissist, that he's both a narcissist and insecure, but I guess that is actually a part of narcissism.
That
right?
is, yeah, yeah, that is that very the, much.
There's highs and lows, and there's a thing. I believe there's a condition called a narcissistic mortification. Whenever you're confronted with the truth, but it does seem like in Trump world, it is a zero sum game. He has to build himself up. He has to tear others down. Is that the? How do you see it?
Yeah, I think there's something, you know, I think that there's something to that. I do think there's a lot of projection. You know, I mean, the fact that he zeroed in on, you know, cosmetic surgery, whether or not Mika Brzezinski has ever had any, I don't know, you know. But we do know that Trump has had some, and we do know that at least his first wife has had it. And, you know, so that there's that too, right? There's a lot of projection of his own, of his own attributes onto other people, which, you know, as you and I have discussed, there's also, I mean, that's been a time honored Republican technique in the political realm when they're, you know, making political accusations. But this is so very, very personal. So I think the narcissism is, yes, it's a huge part of what drives him, but it is rarely without purpose, which is not to say that he's such a genius, but he has a sort of primal cunning, you know, in the way in which he weaponizes his own insecurities in this way, you know.
Well, it's depressing that I've always assumed that there's an expectation on the part of the American people in their president, who's the head of state, to exhibit a certain amount of dignity, because we do have a political system where the political leader is also the head of state. We don't have a queen.
Right.
And I recall that even in the worst of the Monica Lewinsky period, Bill Clinton still acted with a certain amount of dignity in terms of trying to be presidential.
Right.
This guy is just an embarrassment beyond belief. And I wonder, I mean, obviously there's a couple of senators, Ben Sass of Nebraska and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, two Republicans at least have come forward and criticized Trump's latest tweets attacking the Morning Joe couple. Ben Sass saying, please just stop. This isn't normal, and it's beneath the dignity of your office. So what's your sense? Is that, are the Republicans going to just be shameful forever? Are they ever going to step up and just say enough is enough?
Well, you know, I think that they'll do that the moment the Koch brothers tell them it's okay to. And I truly mean that, because if you look at especially the House of Representatives, which is the body from which any kind of articles of impeachment would have to come, it is almost wholly owned by the Koch brothers' donor network. That body, the majority of representatives in that body, you know, were elected with dollars from that donor network. And if they run afoul of the desires of the network, they will get a primary challenge from the right. So I think that they are pretty much in step until the Koch brothers say no. And while the Koch brothers did not love Donald Trump, they did ultimately sign on with him. And, you know, and that's what the Pence pick for vice president was all about. And they want that tax cut. And Paul Ryan, whose big moment today in responding to the tweet was to say, obviously, I don't see that as an appropriate comment. Well, I wouldn't really, I really wouldn't consider that, you know, a resounding condemnation, right? So if you look at, Paul Ryan has said that they not only intend to pass those tax cuts by the end of the year, they are going to make them permanent in some way. And I don't understand the legislative mechanism for making a tax cut permanent, but nonetheless, I mean, they are determined to deliver what the Koch brothers want, and more than anything, they want that. Now, I think that the moment that that goes through, and it may not make it through by the end of this calendar year, then Trump could be much more vulnerable.
So then, just going back to what you were saying earlier, does that mean that Trump, that the Koch brothers are essentially using Trump? He brought them to the dance. He delivered the power that they control the House, and Trump's antics serve to distract the public from the mendacity of, because I've been so puzzled by this healthcare overhaul, because it's not a healthcare overhaul, it's a tax cut for the rich.
Absolutely.
And they make up for it by punishing the poor. So it mm-hmm. just seemed so nakedly plutocratic. Then, of course, you've connected the dots. Of course, it's the Koch brothers. These people, Ryan and McConnell, a whole bunch of them, are just whores and hirelings of the Koch brothers. So is that to say, then, that Trump is actually their perfect president? He's creating confusion, creating distraction. He delivered them the power, and their guy's waiting in the wings, Mike Pence.
Right. Well, I don't know that they would have chosen this path to power in this way. I really don't think that they would have, but it was the way things were going. And so they made a show of saying, "Oh, well, we're not going to put any money into the presidential race," right? Because they ostensibly didn't like the nominee. But they almost never do. They only did that in one cycle. They are all state-based, and if you are turning out Republican voters, right-wing Republican voters, to get to the polls to elect senators, who are they going to vote for for president, right? They're going to vote for the Republican at the top of the ticket. So they did a lot to turn out the vote, and Trump needed them to do that because he didn't have a ground operation. And, you know, and they do have some goals in common, which is basically, as you say, plutocracy and deregulation and the obscuring of the movement of great flows of capital between continents. And that's really, you know, he can do that for them.
So in terms then of his tweeting and body shaming, which has got obviously, it's been something of a headline today.
Right.
Does anybody point out the irony that Trump's wife Melania, her only cause, if you will, is she's pledged to take on cyberbullying,
right?
Especially in social media.
Right.
What is these attacks on Mika Brzezinski anything else but cyberbullying?
I mean, oh, of course. But the First Lady's office, you know, put out a statement that, again, I mean, was as tone deaf as you can imagine, because here's what Stephanie Grisham, her communications director, said in a statement. As the First Lady has stated publicly in the past, when her husband gets attacked, he will punch back 10 times harder. He will punch back. We're talking about a woman, and he was tweeting about her face. I mean, you know, about her ostensibly bloody face. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
So I know that there's an alternative universe at operation here, and that you've got Trump's supporters believing that everything in the mainstream media is fake news, and
right.
they believe. In fact, I don't know whether you've seen these ads. I don't know who's behind them. Basically saying that this great man who's going to deliver America into greatness is being sabotaged by these horrible liberals.
Yeah, that's the NRA. That's the National
Rifle
Association.
Oh, it's the NRA's
thing,
is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, and it's like, you know.
And they're painting the resistance as this violent, you know.
Right.
You know, yes.
And that essentially Rachel Maddow is taking down Trump. And so what can be done about that, these silos here? That you it seems that Trump's people are impervious to reality and to objective information. But I was assuming that his lack of dignity at some point would resonate with some people.
Well, yeah, he may get some fall off, but you know, the religious right are holding on for the Supreme Court appointments. So they're going to let him slide. And that's a good chunk of his hardcore base. I actually attended Ralph Reed's Faith and Freedom Coalition event at which Trump was a keynoter. And, you know, they very enthusiastically took marching orders from him. And he gave them a list of stuff that he wanted them to push for in Congress. And then they all went on buses and went up to Capitol Hill. I mean, it was really quite astonishing. And he, you know, his approval ratings, while low in the country at large, remain high, not just among his hardcore base, but among Republicans. So it becomes this thing where, because he represents a worldview in which the, you know, liberals / progressives, which, you know, really represent a change in the social order by the lights of those who rally around Trump, they'll stick with him. They'll stick with him, I believe, until, you know, I mean, you know, if he gets increasingly, you know, starts to appear demented or does something that is just, you know, even further beyond the pale, we could see a change. But if it stays at this sort of a level, I don't expect them to flee him.
Well, just in closing, tell us a little, if you will, about your article at the New Republic First Family LLC.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I was thinking about, especially, you know, that we really haven't had, first of all, the institution of the First Lady, you know, for better or worse. You know, I of course, had voted for Hillary Clinton, and the one thing I was really looking forward to was seeing that model turned on its head, right, of the first family with the doting First Lady and all of that. And then instead, we got a total reordering of the first family and the absence of a first lady, but not in a good way. And so I was looking at how this first family is organized, and it really is organized like a limited liability corporation, which is a small privately held corporation, which is the kind that the Trump Organization is a collection of. And, you know, with the favored children being sort of executive vice presidents, you know, of that family, if you think of the family as a company that is designed to just advance the needs of the brand. And, you know, you get a sense of that coldness and the absence of culture, because first families, you know, are sort of ambassadors of brand America to the rest of the world and to the nation at large, and we find ways to identify with them generally, and they, you know, they have concerts in the White House. You know, there hasn't been one concert in the White House. I mean, and there's none on the schedule. This kind of stuff is not normal. That's not typical. And you know, a lot of soft power is generally wielded by first ladies. If you think of Jacqueline Kennedy on top of an elephant in India, and you know, we don't have any of that. So that's what my piece addresses.
I see. Well, just in general, in terms of the emoluments and the idea that this is a family that's continuing. Essentially, this is almost a hostile takeover or an acquisition of the White House.
Absolutely. That's exactly where I went with it. Yeah.
And that, you know, just in closing, JFK, of course, his famous invocation was, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Trump has turned that on its head.
He surely
every
has,
day he says, what can my country do for me today? How much money can I make out of being president? I
mean, you bet.
It is so disgusting. Anyway, thank you so much, Adele. I enjoyed talking to you.
Great being with you as always, Ian.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Adele Stan, who's a weekly columnist at the American Prospect, and she also has a new article at the New Republic, First Family LLC. Well, thanks a lot again, Adele.
That was great, Ian. Thanks so much.
Talk to you soon, I hope.
What time are you on? Is it 8 p.m. my time?
Yeah, it's 8 p.m.
Okay, because I want to tweet it. Okay.
Yeah, the 8 p.m., and it goes at about 160 stations. Okay.
Terrific. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Great.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.